of us have come to know throughout the years. Jody Gillette from the White House. Good morning.
Good morning, Brian. Thank you, everybody. Hi there.
Hi.
Just want to thank everybody for coming all the way out to D.C. I know it's a long trek for some of you to come all the way out here and hold your regular business session here in the D.C. Capitol. It makes it much easier for people like myself who work in D.C., and I know it's not that's not the reason that you come here only, but it sure makes things facilitates the dialogue better with the government officials. And I want to congratulate you for so many years of advocacy. I've worked with many of you on different topics throughout the years, and I just wanted to make note of how many of you have been very instrumental to what we've been able to accomplish in the Obama administration. And without going into too much detail, your executive director, your president have been stalwart allies with the administration in achieving some incredible things. Kit Key's always there, has always been advocating for a carcere fix, always been looking at ways to help tribes develop their economies. Brian Patterson, I worked with him closely. I don't think I've ever publicly said how many hours that your president put into helping the Department of Interior develop its consultation policy, and that was something that is pretty much one of a kind. I don't think we'd ever had in the federal government tribal representatives sitting at the table through every step of the way, and I think that just want to acknowledge how many hours he's been putting into making sure that the consultation policies and making sure that the work that we're doing, and as we ask for input, that input is meaningful. And he and Robert Tipicani spent countless hours with myself and others on the phone as we reviewed every single comment that came in on that policy. And I learned a lot from your president, and I know that the people that I worked with also learned a lot. And I think that he got a window into what happens when we get comments in the administration. There's certainly a need to have that tribal voice that's really strong. And then when the federal government receives those comments, we have a job to do. So we have to make sure that we can make it fit within the confines of what our attorneys say is possible. It has to fit and align with other things that may or may not support what tribes are saying. And that's been my job. That's been my role, is to try to find ways to be aligned with tribes within the administration. I also like to thank the work Lynn Malerba, Chief Malerba from the Mohegan tribe. Although I don't work as directly with her as my colleagues do, she's been a complete breath of fresh air when it comes to some of the really tangled and twisted things that we have to work on with the field or the issue of health and healthcare reform. And as your STAC ally, she's been just wonderful. So thank you for the hours. And I know that this is the work that you do with the federal government is something that is what you do on top of your existing duties. And I see Terry Henry, and I just have to point out Terry. I know there's so many people that do this kind of extra work. Terry did a tremendous job. I saw her pretty regularly when the Violence Against Women reauthorization fight was on, and got to talk with you and commiserate and rejoice in the end. Thank goodness we were successful in getting that special criminal jurisdiction authority in the VAWA reauthorization. And I have to point out that not only was Terry on the front lines of that, she had so many of our men and women tribal leaders, our advocates, and our victims from Indian Country standing there together. And I think it was tremendous that we were able to reach such a critical point of support from not just Indian Country, but from women's groups in the LGBT, in the immigration community, and everybody supported each other. And that really was a huge game changer for D.C. politics. I think somebody was talking about all of the things that were mentioned in the President's State of the Union speech last year, and there were only two legislative ideas that made it through Congress last year, and violence against women reauthorization was one of those. So thank you for that. I could go on and on, but I know there's a lot more work to be done. I don't want to deny that. I'm not going to deny that things aren't perfect in Indian Country. There's still a lot of need. There's still a lot of difficult issues that we face when it comes to being able to develop your economies, to being able to educate your children in the way that you want to educate them, being able to deal with some of the climate change needs. Climate change, I guess, challenges that are facing you on the front lines. I mean, the Hurricane Sandy impacted Uset tribes directly. But one of the neatest things that I got to experience was seeing an awesome administrator, Fugate, get on the phone with tribal leaders from across the country. And it was the tribal leaders who had gone through disasters who were offering so many helpful suggestions and just reaching out and saying that they're there. And so, you know, those are the kinds of things that make my job worth it. Some of the things that are more difficult is that fleeting moment that I get probably a couple times a week where I know that time's going to fly. There's going to be a time that I wake up, and I certainly have a shelf life in my role because I'm only here at the pleasure of the president, and then there's going to be an election, and my boss isn't going to be able to run, so we're going to have to drill down and really see how we can institutionalize the things that we're already doing well together, and that was most of the impetus for the work that we put into on the White House Tribal Nation or White House Council on Native American Affairs, which solidified that commitment of the president to do an annual convening with tribal leaders. Everybody's my colleague Reyna is going to be here, and I just have to always explain that, I don't do it enough often enough because we have new tribal leaders, but my role is completely the invention of this president. In my role as domestic policy senior advisor for Native American Affairs in the White House Domestic Policy Council, my role really is to advise the president and the senior staff on Native American needs and issues and challenges, and that's something that had never existed before. And during the Clinton administration, there were people who were in the Domestic Policy Council that had a strong voice for Native peoples and Mary Smith. There were others, Doncia Strong, Hill. Those are people who were part of, I guess, the beginnings of Natives in the White House. Natives being not just sort of something that people have to pick up when they are in, I guess, coming from a place where they don't know anything about Indian Country and then having to make decisions. President Obama said that most of the problems that Indian Country is dealing with is the result of unintentional, attacks or consequences for people just not understanding Indian Country and either leaving them out or including them on things where they should have been taken care of separately. So, one of the things that Council on Native American Affairs does is it solidifies the conference. It also solidifies the role of the White House in developing policy for the whole administration. And we're working on, and I think Reyna's going to talk a little bit about that, but we're working on what's the best mechanism to make sure that the tribal leaders have a voice in that process and a consistent voice in that process. And the council itself was developed based upon a loose working group that was part of the Clinton administration. There were Secretary Babbitt had convened an interagency working group, and that had taken place over a number of years. And we decided to do it through to establish a group based upon an executive order. And there already is a lot of interagency projects and interagency issues that working groups and issues that people are working on. For instance, Indian Child Welfare Act. We do a regular convening of relevant agencies for that. So we are just basically trying to solidify what we see as the good practices. And I want to thank everybody for all the contributions that you've given us, and really that's what I see our role as we come into the second term, the second year of the second term. We definitely need that partnership, and without it, we're not going to be in a good place in a few years. I do want to say that the things that I work on, sometimes it's not abundantly clear what is the policy role, and so I always have to just say, there are really sticky things. I get the really sticky things when the president gets involved in something. The president asks for advice, and so I have to advise him, and I try not to do that without asking tribal leaders what they think. And if I'm not successful at that, the best thing that I can do is ask for you all to be in front of the people that I'm working with. And I think a really good example of that has been the work that we've done on the budget, and the stalwart advocates that you have on your end, asking for relief from sequester, asking for to not be cut any further, to not even a hold harmless. But I understand that we're not in a good place budget wise in most areas. There are some places that we've been able to make headway, but not at all where you, we need you to be there for you. But we've had a little bit of success. We've gotten our levels back to 2012 passed, and also we're working really hard to address the contract support cost issue. And that's another area where time and time again we've heard loudly and clearly from all tribes. There isn't a single tribe that's been saying we don't want full contract support cost funding, and that's made it made everybody in the administration go back to the drawing table and try to figure out how we can achieve those goals, knowing full well that there are difficult choices. When that is a 100% goal, there's other things that we're going to have to and I'm really honest about this. We have to make some difficult choices. And we'll be looking to you all for guidance on that. I think 3:00 today, there's going to be a tribal leaders call with myself and Dr. Rubido and Assistant Secretary Washburn to talk more about this. And so that's on the operating 2014 plan, but we also are, Congress asked us to work directly with tribes on coming up with a longer term, I don't want to say solution, because I don't know that there is an easy solution, but a longer term plan for how we're going to deal with contract support costs. Other than that, we are very close to releasing our conference report. We used to do two reports with the Tribal Nations Conference. We did an annual report release. We released at the time of the conference, then we did a synopsis of what we heard at the conference, and we've combined the two so we don't have two publications going on, and that'll be coming out any minute, probably within the next week or two. And part of the reason we wanted to collapse those is sometimes people couldn't see where the how the tribal leaders' voices were being reflected in the synopsis. It's just streamlining and trying to make things easier to find in one place. We're just working on a ton of different things. I do want to say one more thing, and then I just would like to open it up to question and answer, but. I talked a little bit about opportunities or what my role is. Sometimes what my role is to try to get tribes included in things that bigger items that the administration is working on. Climate change is one of those. RENA's primary role is to make sure that we're doing the right outreach and you have the adequate information. And she and I are partners because she helps me to understand what the trends are and what people are thinking in terms of things like climate change. One of the things that the president talked about last year in the State of the Union address was the Promise Zones initiative, and we were able to successfully have one tribe included in that tranche. And I just want to make sure that it's clear. It's a wonderful opportunity. It's very limited. Nationwide, there's only going to be 20 over the next 4 years. And so last fall, there were five. There will be five more this year. In each subsequent year, there'll be another five places that are designated Promise Zones. In the Choctaw Nation, we're successful in their application process to obtain that status. And some people, there's lots of questions about how that was designated and how what the process was for coming up with that. And I just have to say that it really isn't about money, because there's not a single dime awarded with that designation. It's more about trying to leverage the technical assistance of the federal government at the local level to make sure that the Economic Development Administration, the rural development, all the different entities across the government are better coordinated at the local level, so that the end goal is to create more jobs and to have it is similar to the ECEZ initiative of the Clinton administration, but because we don't have tax credits, Congress has an aggressive tax package that goes along with it, but they haven't passed that. And so right now, basically, it's technical assistance and also additional points awarded if you get that designation. And then just one more thing about the future. There's going to be another round of RFPs, or requests for proposals, and that comes out from the Department of HUD, who will, I think those will be coming out in a few months. And the way that we designed the program was to have recipients already, and I'm not sure we're going to do it the same way this year, but that you had to have achieved a certain kind of success in an existing grant in order to be invited to be applied. So it's not a completely open to everybody opportunity. It's really those tribes that have figured out a few of the grant programs, and I can give people more information and provide Wanda and Kiki some information on how that all works to share with the members. But I do want to leave time for Q&A, so happy
good, to good, good. That was a lot of ground you covered, Jody, and we thank you for taking the time to come across the river and put our minds together. Certainly, there's a number of accomplishments to celebrate the legacy of our president and his outreach and effect with Indian country. However, there remains a lot more to be done. But I think as we put our minds together, there are certain areas in which we can affect change that aren't a stretch, that are already in the work. The White House Council on Native American Affairs is as an example. I'd just like to share with you quickly, Jody, and we'll get to tribal leaders' comments, that as this council, in their development of five priorities, and as you mentioned, the effort behind Department of Interior consultation policy, you know, that process really shared with me, Jody, that there would not need to be a capital C consultation policy if we were able to develop and leverage meaningful constructive relationships. And that's really where, that type of perspective really lent itself through that Department of Interior consultation policy with Indian country. Meaningful constructive relationships is truly an opportunity that this Native American Affairs Council has. And I would like to offer an example of USDA through one of their sister agencies, NRCS, has a working effectively program with Indian Country. And I believe that through Secretary Vilsack's leadership to the council, that this working effectively with Indian Country workshop that is hosted by NRCS could serve as a model as leveraging the trust responsibility in working effectively with Indian Country. They have all the whole platform broken out and developed through their NEDS training program, and it does have a curriculum. I don't know why I'm struggling to get that out here, but as we approach the final term and in partnership and putting emphasis behind areas that would support the sacred trust responsibility, that should not be held hostage to the politics in the DC arena. And I think this working effectively group would really serve the federal agencies an understanding of their role to protect the tribes. And, you know, again, that's a zero cost and something that could be implemented quickly. I'd like to work with you a little bit more on what that would look like. So, Chiefs, any thoughts, comments, observations? Councilman McGee?
Jody? Thank you for being here. It's always a pleasure to see you, and we've worked hand in hand on a lot of issues over the past number of years. But one of the things I wanted to address, and I think it's going to be probably every speaker here today or over the next few days that probably try to bring up this issue, is, you know, now that we're in the, let's just say it's the president's lame duck, you know, he's got, you know, a couple of years left. I appreciate the leadership he's taken in the past and your office has taken in the past with your predecessor and yourself regarding the Cartieri, putting it within the budget. You know, within the president's budget, when it listed the anomalies, I think it was called, you know. However, I think it's time that we actually need him now, you know, to go a step further. Mm-hmm. With 2 years left within his leadership, I think that's one of these times that he can take on this issue, start making those direct phone calls, start making, you know, with the leaders of the Senate and the House to say, this is an issue that we need to address, this is a legislation that we need to pass forward, and how can we get it done? I think that lately, and I'm sure you've noticed it, you know, just with the Blue Lagoon case coming out, and you have, I think Brian Patterson mentioned earlier, the Apache Act.
Big Lagoon.
Big Lagoon.
I want to go to Blue Lagoon. I want to go that.
Picking the other movie, sorry, that's coming out again. Big Lagoon. You know, the issue that's, you know, come out there and along with the Apache Act, I think that it's time for him just to, you know, step it up. With these last 2 years. I appreciate, like I said before, the leadership we've taken in the past, but I think that we've seen now the impact that this decision is having on tribes and their ability to govern their nations. And, across every state, it's happening. And any opportunity that states get or attorney generals get or even other community members get to stop a tribe and their development has been disastrous. So if you could just work with them to figure out the best way to get that done and get that moving, it would be helpful.
Thank you. Yes, I will do that, and as you know, we are planning to include the Clean Cartieri fix in our budget again this year, and looking for ways to be a stronger advocate. I know that you're going to be speaking with Solicitor Tompkins later this afternoon, and she's going to probably outline some of the things that how she's reacting to the Big Lagoon decision and. Give you some. I would leave that conversation to her. But definitely, we need to figure this out. Of course, there are lots of things that this president can do. One of the things is not act on behalf of Congress. And the idea that, and I'm, you know, I just have to be frank about this. The idea that Cartieri fix is number one priority. I mean, we've heard that over and over again. We don't even really have to discuss that. That's a huge impact, and it's consequential for many tribes and in how they develop their economies. But I will say that the idea that we could get exactly what we want from Congress hasn't been possible, and I don't know where people are in terms of is there a way that it doesn't have to be exactly what we want, what we've been asking for in our budget. If Congress was going to do what we asked, mm-hmm. they would have done it by now. So now what? And it continues to get worse. We have the judicial sort of aggressive use of the Carcieri decision. How do we? I'm interested in those discussions because I know that there's just to be frank, there's activity happening on compromises, and I don't know if we've had discussions, frank discussions, about what that means. I don't have those conversations, so I'm curious to know, and maybe that's not a topic for a discussion here, but you know, I'm certainly interested in what folks are thinking.
Certainly, Jody, we can share some of that. We do have a task force led by Chairman from Tunica Biloxi, Chairman Parit, and we were aware of the principled draft Carcieri fix document. Councilman McGee co-chairs that Carcieri task force. We'd be willing to have that discussion with you. We have a critical in-house discussion that our leaders will lend themselves to this afternoon, but certainly it's our ability to put our minds forward and navigate a path forward that is not rooted in compromise, but it is one that recognizes the inherent sovereign right of our peoples, first peoples in this country. Councilwoman Littinger, Tunica Biloxi.
Yes, Ms. Gillette, thank you for coming this morning. I want to go back to a statement that Treasurer McGee made. He specifically asked for those direct phone calls to be made. I mean, no one can ignore the progress that has been made on the public relations sides with Native peoples since President Obama has come into office. But for every advance that has been made on the surface, the longer this Carcieri issue has lingered, the more litigation that has occurred, the more detrimental decisions that have been handed down by the courts have undermined everything positive that the administration has attempted to do. So I'm not sure that we're any better off today than we were when this administration first began. And we have asked from the very beginning for the White House, for the president, not simply the administration, the agencies, the departments, but the president's office to bring his weight and bearance upon those congressional people who